What makes us do the things we do? Why can humans build hospitals one day and wage war the next? The answer lies in a fascinating web of biological processes that unfold across different timescales, from milliseconds to millennia. Our behaviors emerge from an intricate dance between our brains, hormones, genes, and environments. Rather than simple cause and effect relationships, human behavior stems from complex interactions between multiple biological systems, each influencing the others in feedback loops that can either amplify or dampen our tendencies toward kindness or cruelty. When encountering potential threats, like a possible snake on a trail, your amygdala triggers physiological responses before conscious awareness, part of a sophisticated emotional assessment system. The prefrontal cortex, your brain's executive center, helps you make difficult but correct choices. This region matures by your mid-20s, with its ventral medial portion processing emotional decisions, while the dorsolateral handles cognitive control, working in harmony. Your dopamine system drives anticipation more than pleasure. Once reward patterns form, dopamine releases more strongly during anticipation than the reward itself, explaining addiction cravings and our need for escalating stimuli. Though we believe in our rational decision-making, subliminal cues shape our behavior. Your brain processes racial differences in milliseconds, with the amygdala automatically responding to other race faces until the frontal cortex engages to suppress implicit biases. Environmental factors subtly influence our perceptions and judgments. Warm drinks make us perceive others as warmer personalities, while hard chairs make us view others as more rigid. Even moral judgments shift with environmental cues. Foul odors lead to harsher moral judgments, and disgusting images temporarily increase politically conservative views. Hours before behavior occurs, hormones modulate how we perceive and respond to the world. Rather than causing behaviors, they make certain responses more or less likely by adjusting our sensitivity to environmental triggers. Testosterone has been unfairly demonized. Rather than causing aggression, it makes people more sensitive to status challenges. Most remarkably, rising testosterone increases whatever behavior maintains status in a particular context, which could be aggression in some situations, but generosity in others. When social status comes from being seen as fair, testosterone actually increases pro-social behavior. Oxytocin, often called the love hormone, has a darker side. While enhancing bonding and trust toward in-group members, it simultaneously increases negative behaviors toward outsiders, making people more likely to preemptively betray out-group members and exaggerating unconscious biases. Rather than being universally pro-social, oxytocin enhances social competence while potentially fostering ethnocentrism. Stress hormones like glucocorticoids dramatically influence decision-making, typically for the worse. They increase aggression, bias us toward selfishness, and decrease empathy. Disturbingly, aggression can reduce stress, explaining why domestic violence increases after unexpected football team losses. 10% generally, 13% during playoff contention, 20% when the upset is by a rival. Your brain isn't static. It physically reshapes itself based on your experiences. The discovery that adult brains make new neurons, neurogenesis, revolutionized neuroscience. Humans generate new hippocampal neurons throughout life, with about 3% replaced monthly. This process is enhanced by learning, exercise, and environmental enrichment, while inhibited by stress. Experience can change brain regions dramatically enough to alter their size. London taxi drivers' posterior hippocampus enlarges during the multi-year process of studying for their notoriously difficult license test. Musicians develop larger auditory cortical representations for musical sounds, especially for their own instruments. This remapping occurs surprisingly quickly. Piano practice for just 2 hours daily expands motor cortex representation within days. The brain can also remap in remarkable ways. In blind people adept at Braille, neurons that normally process fingertip sensations send axons to the visual cortex. One blind woman who suffered a stroke in her visual cortex lost her ability to read Braille. The bumps felt flattened, while other tactile functions remained intact. The adolescent brain differs fundamentally from both child and adult brains. The frontal cortex is the last region to fully mature, not completing development until the mid-20s. Counterintuitively, frontal maturation involves reduction, not growth. Less optimal connections are pruned away, making the system more efficient. Teenagers experience emotions more intensely because their emotion-regulating systems are still developing. While adults viewing emotional faces show amygdala activation followed by emotion-regulating prefrontal responses, adolescents show weaker prefrontal responses, allowing amygdala activation to continue growing. Adolescents take more risks not just because they're poor at risk assessment, but because they seek different sensations. Their dopamine reward system responds excessively to large rewards, while small rewards actually feel aversive, creating a system where strong rewards produce excessive dopaminergic signaling, while sensible, prudent rewards feel lousy. Childhood experiences leave lasting biological imprints on the developing brain. Maternal care profoundly shapes development. Infants need love, warmth, affection, responsiveness, and consistency. Harry Harlow's iconic experiments with rhesus monkeys conclusively showed that infants prefer comfort, terry cloth surrogate mothers, over mere nutrition, wire surrogate with milk. Various forms of childhood adversity produce remarkably similar adult outcomes. Depression, anxiety, substance abuse, impaired cognitive capabilities, poor impulse control, and relationships that replicate childhood adversities. Childhood adversity causes persistent abnormalities in stress physiology. Elevated stress hormones damage developing brains, particularly the hippocampus and frontal cortex. By age 5, lower socioeconomic status correlates with higher stress hormones, thinner frontal cortex, and poorer executive function. Despite these risks, many victims develop into reasonably functional adults. The most important factor in resilience is the cumulative burden, the sheer number of adversities experienced versus protective factors present. Multiple categories of adversity dramatically worsen prognosis, while protective factors like stable, loving families can buffer against single adversities. Despite evidence that might make one pessimistic, human behavior has dramatically improved in recent centuries. Slavery, once worldwide, is now universally outlawed. Violence has plummeted. 15th-century Europe averaged 41 homicides per 100,000 people yearly, while today's global average is 6.9, with many countries below 1. Intergroup contact can reduce prejudice when groups meet in equal numbers with equal treatment, in neutral settings with institutional oversight, while pursuing a shared goal. Under these conditions, contact significantly reduces prejudice across racial, religious, ethnic, and sexual orientation divides. Perhaps most inspiring is the story of Sapolsky's baboons. For 30 years, he studied these typically violent, hierarchical primates. When tuberculosis killed the most aggressive males in one troop, the social structure transformed. Males began grooming each other, extremely rare behavior. Aggression levels decreased, and stress hormone levels dropped. Most remarkably, new males transferring into the troop adopted this peaceful culture within 6 months. This social plasticity in baboons, once considered textbook examples of inevitable aggression, demonstrates that if baboons can show such flexibility, humans certainly can too. Our biology doesn't determine our destiny. It creates possibilities that our choices and cultures can shape.